This is the WRIF Postgame Podcast. You're listening to The Squad with Ann Erickson.
That wasn't just a win. That was a definitive win. I mean, the Lions just trampled all over the Jags, and it was great. I mean, I feel like from a standpoint of just a feeling standpoint, we really needed this, right? I'm seeing Lions fans just so stoked, and it's not the same as if we would beat the Bills on Thanksgiving. That would have been just beyond great, but it still feels really good. It feels like we've got momentum and that we've got talent. We've got a good, solid roster, and it's just about making the right moves to come out with wins and not close losses. It's Ann Erickson on The Squad, and as always, it's great to have you here. Don't forget that I would love to connect with you online if you have an idea for the show or just want to talk about football. Find me on Twitter and Snapchat at Ann Erickson, Instagram and TikTok at Erickson Ann. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Great guest back on the show, Justin Rogers from the Detroit News. Awesome. Well, Justin, it's great to have you back on the squad. So thank you for being here.
A little bit different situation than last time with this team, huh?
Yeah. Wow. What happened? I mean, obviously coming off a big win here against the Jags, a definitive win. I'm happy about it, but if anything, I'm also like a little frustrated about how I feel like our lineup is solid, and I'm wondering if we should have won more games early on, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's an absolutely fair question. It's something that's going to be dissected as, you know, the season goes on, and you know, if the Lions end up missing out on the playoffs, which is still the most likely scenario, I think, you know, current odds have them at somewhere between 5% and 10%. Like, you're going to look at the games that they lost that were particularly close, whether it's Buffalo and Thanksgiving or the Seattle game where they couldn't get a single stop and ended up losing 48-45. And I think the one that really sticks out is the Minnesota game early in the season. You know, I thought they controlled that one. They, had Minnesota on the ropes in the final minutes, and it really was a coaching blunder in that game, attempting a field goal when, you know, could have punted or gone for it on fourth down. Probably both would have been better options. Minnesota scores with under a minute to go and takes that one and steals it from you. They should have more wins. You know, they shouldn't have started 1-6. They were better than that. They're certainly playing at a very high level right now. And, now it's a matter of seeing whether they can, you know, win 4 of their last 5 or even run the table here and make a run at the postseason.
Wow, so you said that it's a 5% to 10% chance that they'll make the playoffs. Is that low?
It's such an uphill climb. They're, you know, 2 games behind Seattle in the loss column. That's who holds the 7 seed right now. And on top of that, Seattle holds the tiebreaker with the Lions. So it's really a 3-game hole with 5 to go. The couple other teams that could potentially catch the Giants and San Francisco. You know, San Francisco probably wouldn't have been in that mix before yesterday when they lost quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo for the season with foot injury. So, you know, who knows how they'll be able to sustain without him. But, the Giants is probably the one most worth watching. The Lions took a hit with their playoff odds yesterday when New York tied with Washington, as opposed to, you know, there being a definitive result in that game. A tie being, you know, a half game gain in the standings is really kind of meaningless in a 16 game season. So, the Lions hold the tiebreaker there. The tiebreaker won't come into play, but the Giants do have a pretty tough schedule down the stretch. So, you know, if they were to lose 3 games, that still means the Lions would have to run the table, and that means 6 wins in a row. That's something they haven't done since 1995.
Wow, that's a bummer, because I think everyone would love to see them finally go to the playoffs. You mentioned the coaching blunder, you know, in one of the previous games. I feel like there have been quite a few coaching blunders.
You know, I think that gets magnified when you play in a lot of close games, and particularly when you lose a lot of close games. You know, that's when people start really picking apart all the little tiny decisions that are made. You don't hear it as much with coaches like Bill Belichick and Andy Reid making coaching blunders, because their teams historically have won the majority of their games and often won the majority of their games handily. So, you know, when you're looking at a 3-point loss, you start picking apart for maybe the big moment in the game that costs the team, whether that's a turnover by the quarterback or, you know, a time management decision at the end of the game. So you know, it's never going to come into play. I thought Campbell coached a good game yesterday, but even if he had made a mistake or two, you wouldn't be talking about it in a 40-14 victory. It wouldn't matter. You know, it didn't matter that you may, maybe he made a decision that wasn't great in the New York Giants win a couple weeks back. So I think that's the reason it gets magnified. And look, he's still in many ways a young head coach. You know, he has approximately 2 full seasons under his belt. I think some of those mistakes are going to happen, but you also see within that a guy that is constantly analyzing himself after games and making adjustments. And I thought we kind of saw some of that yesterday in regards to the fact that they really never let the foot off the gas. And that's something I think so many coaches do in the NFL. They're so conservative. They get a 10-point lead, and they just try to run out the clock by running the ball. And that's, in a large way, that's the Lions' identity. They want to be a team that runs the ball, controls the game, and instead of doing that and kind of just trying to put away the Jaguars by, you know, running out the clock yesterday, they kind of kept the foot on the gas, put the foot on the throat, if you will, by continuing to pass and continuing to score. And just, I think that is a sign of maturity by this coaching staff to deviate from maybe the brand of football they've tried to be, established themselves as, and going with a more modern approach to not only win that game, but thoroughly dominate that game.
I think that's a great point. And speaking of dominating, it was a great game for Jared Goff, I felt. What are your thoughts on Goff and where he's going with the franchise?
You know, it's a fascinating discussion, and it's one where I feel like you're kind of riding the waves of recency bias, right? You know, the quarterback position remains the most important on the football field for all NFL teams. And, you know, there's 2 types of quarterbacks, really. There's a type that you can get by and win with, and there's a type that could maybe carry the franchise. And there are only a handful of those really elite carry franchise type guys in the NFL, the Patrick Mahomes and the Josh Allens and, you know, earlier in his career, Tom Brady. You know, there's only, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 of those guys at a given time in the NFL. And then every other team is just looking for a guy that's good enough to get by with whatever else you surround him with. And I think Goff falls firmly into that classification. And you've seen him at his best, not just yesterday, but early in the season when he's surrounded by the weapons the team brought in. And so when there are injuries and he's kind of got to carry or shoulder a little bit more of the load, that's where you see a lesser consistency from the quarterback position from this team. And, you know, that probably could be said, but for most quarterbacks in the NFL, you take away their best players and they struggle, or they struggle at least to perform at their maximum capacity. But when Goff has had his full, you know, full arsenal that the Lions have provided for him, he's been pretty darn good. And that was one of his better games yesterday. You know, his propensity for making one big mistake, it did show up yesterday. You know, it showed up early. He threw one that was basically undercut by a defender, but, you know, the Lions caught a break. That ball went off that defender's hand, and Amon-Ra St. Brown caught it and caught it at the 1-yard line, and it ended up being a touchdown instead of an interception. So I look at this upcoming draft, and I don't see a sure thing in this quarterback group. I really like Bryce Young. I think he's going to be a good NFL player. I'm not as sold on C.J. Stroud or Will Levis, the other 2 guys at the top of the draft. The Lions probably won't have a shot at Young, even with the Rams pick looking better and better that they inherited from that Matthew Stafford trade. But, you know, if it boils down to them having a shot at Levis or Stroud, at this point, and I might ride this recency bias, this wave of emotion, and change my mind later, but at this point, I can't see them taking one of those guys. I think they're more than likely to address other needs and continue to try to succeed with Goff as the answer.
I agree. I have to say, going into the season, I was very skeptical of Goff because he had such a rough first season. But I have been really impressed with him. I felt like he's not the problem with the team this year when we have lost the games. He does do the mistakes, as you mentioned, but in general, I just feel like he's had a strong performance, especially lately. And when I look at what's out there, I'm not someone who really takes like huge chances anyway in a situation like this. So I'm like, you know, why mess with what's kind of working right now for something that's not a sure thing? It's not like there's a star standing out that's going to be, you know, up in the draft that, as you mentioned, is a sure pick that we're going to be able to get.
It's the decision that decides often a general manager and a head coach's fate, right? Like if you choose a quarterback and you saddle your horses to that guy, so rarely does a general manager or a coach survive that if it ends up being a mistake. And so, you know, Goff might be the conservative choice, but you know his flaws. You know, maybe he's not the best deep ball passer. You know that he maybe doesn't deal the best with pressure, or that, you know, he's not a guy you want to put in a tough 2-minute drive situation to win you games. But, you know, it's not like this team is on the cusp of Super Bowl. Really what they are is they're on the cusp of playoff contention. And, you know, if you continue to build up the defense around him, obviously this offense with the pieces that it has can score with just about anybody. So you give, you know, them enough pieces to be league average, you know, as opposed to still the worst defense in the league in terms of allowing points and yardage over the course of the season. Like, that's a good enough team to make the playoffs, to win a division title, to win a playoff game. And then, you know, maybe you get into that situation where you're evaluating the quarterback position. I know it seems, you know, unlikely you can find your quarterback when you're successful, but, you know, other teams have proven that if you're willing to make the dramatic push at the end to get your guy, and look no further than the Rams-Lions trade from last year where, you know, Matthew Stafford was a missing piece for the Rams. Like, you can get it done if you're willing to give up enough assets. So I think you continue to ride Goff. I think you build up around him and you see how far he can take you. And if you decide he can't get you over the hump at the end, if you get to that point, that's when you make the move.
Totally agree. Now, this was the first game for Jameson Williams, and we didn't see him a ton. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it was totally expected. Look, I didn't even expect him to suit up this week. You know, good for him for showing what he was able to show in practice health-wise to get that clearance and get a step ahead in his return-to-play process. But if you look at what the Lions have done all season and really always under Campbell and general manager Brad Holmes, they've been very conservative with how they've reintroduced players to the lineup coming off long-term injuries. And even some shorter-term stuff, you know, DJ Chark just came back from missing 6 games with an ankle injury. It's not really comparable to an ACL, but when Chark came back in the lineup, he played 11 snaps and saw one target. When Josh Reynolds came back from playing or missing 3 games with a back injury, he played 8 snaps in his first game back. So this kind of was expected that they wouldn't give him a whole lot of work, and particularly for a guy that doesn't have any other experience, right? He has no pro experience. So they wanted to get him dressed. They wanted to get him through the pregame routine. They wanted to get him through, you know, subbing in and lining up correctly and doing all the small things right. From here, they can build him up. And, you know, unlike some of the other guys they brought back from injury and then, you know, kind of expanded their workload rapidly, they don't really have to do that with Jameson. They've got Chark, they've got Reynolds, they've got St. Brown, they've got, you know, some lesser options and Khalif Raymond. Like, it's kind of a crowded depth chart. And so they can bring him along slowly. You know, he will play more than 8 snaps. He will get some targets here as the season goes on. But, you know, barring an injury to one of those guys I just mentioned, like, I would be surprised if Williams plays more than 20 or 30 snaps in any game this season. It's really about 2023. It's getting him acclimated. It's getting him ready. It's getting him some experience. And then you kind of unleash the full product next year as a featured part of the offense.
I think that's a great point, and I definitely look forward to seeing him more next year. What are your thoughts on the NFC North? It's been crazy. I mean, I remember going into this season, people thought the Vikings were going to be the worst in the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's been a surprise. And anytime you switch a coach, like, you don't really know what you're going to get. You know, the Vikings had some, you know, really strong foundational pieces on that roster, both offensively and defensively. You know, Kirk Cousins is kind of in that same classic quarterback as Goff that, you know, you just put enough around him know, he's enough to get you to a certain level, right, to division titles, to playoff games. And he has arguably the best receiver in football in Justin Jefferson. He has one of the best running backs in football in Dalvin Cook. They've got other weapons in the passing game. They added TJ Hockenson from the Lions. So, like, it's a very good offense. The defense is, you know, it's kind of like we talked about with the Lions. Like, you get to league average, you can do plenty with a good offense. And so the defense is good enough. They've, I don't even know what their record is. I think they're 10-2 at this point. Like, they had a chance to put away the division last week. They'll have another chance to put it away when they come to Ford Field. I think the crazier thing is just how fast and how far the Packers have fallen. We kind of expected the Bears to be bad. It's been interesting to watch Justin Fields round a corner and look like he's got a pretty bright future. They've got work to do with their personnel in general, but, you know, I've always subscribed to the belief that as long as Aaron Rodgers is there, the Green Bay Packers are the team to beat in the NFC North. And he has not been enough this year. Like, I understand that he's been playing through some injuries, but, you know, you take away a great receiver like that, and you kind of leave him with a patchwork crew, and, you know, patchwork crew that really had some young players that needed to take some time to develop. Like, this is the result. It's what happens. Like, even great quarterbacks need some level caliber of playmakers. And, you know, you look at Philadelphia and Miami this year, two teams that had young quarterbacks that were kind of playing at a below average level that had potential, and they surround them with high end talent this offseason, with Philadelphia trading for AJ Brown and Miami trading for Tyreek Hill. And then suddenly both those guys now are sitting atop the MVP conversation. Like, you have to give your quarterback talent. You can go back to Jared Goff. No receivers last year that were worth a damn to start the season. And obviously St. Brown has developed into a very, very nice piece. And you give him a guy like Josh Reynolds off of waivers, who's not a star, but at least there's some chemistry there. DJ Chark is a nice addition. And eventually Jameson Williams. Like, that is a lot of talent for a quarterback to operate with compared to the group that they started with last year. So it makes a difference. You have to give your quarterback weapons or you can't properly evaluate.
I think that's a great point. And I'm shocked about Green Bay as well. I mean, what's going on with Aaron Rodgers? I don't know what the deal is. He's just so off this year. But as you mentioned, it's not just him. It's that he doesn't maybe have the pieces of the puzzle that he needs.
Well, you know, you had two rookie receivers, and I think they were counting on them to play big roles kind of starting out. And it just, that isn't how it works often. Like, it takes time for guys to get acclimated. And, you know, Christian Watson's a great example. Like, unbelievable physical skill set, size, frame, everything. But he came from a program in college that, you know, North Dakota State is a really good collegiate team, but they play at such a lower level of competition. And then you look schematically, and it's a run-first offense. And so to transition to the level of competition of the pros, to learn a completely new scheme, and to, I guess, be dealing with a perfectionist at quarterback, like with Rodgers, which adds, you know, a layer of pressure onto a rookie's head, like, it's going to take some time. And now we look in, like, the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, like, it's been one of the most dynamic receivers in the NFL, but it wasn't going to be that way out of the box. And so, you know, to understand why things have gone the way they have, it's you look at how they set themselves up for success to start the season. And, you know, they thought probably that their quarterback play and their defensive play was going to be enough to get over some of those lumps, and really they haven't. You know, that's what happened. Like, they just couldn't get that passing game going fast enough when the rest of the team really didn't carry them, I think, the way they thought they would.
Definitely. And you actually mentioned my favorite quarterback there a little bit, the Eagles, Jalen Hurts. I think he is so inspiring. Every time I see him interviewed post game, whether they win or lose, which obviously they've won way more than they've lost, but he always has something really solid to say. And obviously his performance speaks for itself. And they're kind of my Super Bowl favorites solely because of him. But who are your Super Bowl favorites?
Well, Jalen Hurts is kind of unofficially my favorite quarterback right now too, and that's because despite my best efforts to quit fantasy football, I keep getting looped into one league. That's my guy. I drafted him kind of late, rolled the dice, and he is carrying the squad right now. So, thanks, Jalen. you know, I look at the NFC, and I really liked the San Francisco 49ers until they lost Garoppolo. I think that puts a huge dent in what they can accomplish. And so, yeah, I have to lean with the Eagles in the NFC right now. Like, they've been consistently showing it all year. I kind of like some of the upgrades they've made mid-season to their defense, and it's just a very complete team in terms of they can run the ball, they can pass the ball, they can defend. Like, it's a good squad. And so, you know, I look for them to, you know, emerge in the NFC. AFC is a little bit more wide open. I think it's I mean, there's probably 3 to 5 teams that could emerge, and obviously Kansas City's going to, you know, remain, you know, a favorite, just given they've done it, they've been there before. Patrick Mahomes still probably the best quarterback in the NFL. They haven't experienced quite the drop-off some people expected when they traded away Tyreek Hill. But I think Buffalo is in that mix. And look, I like Miami a lot, too. You know, they've got a young team. They've got some things to sort out on the injury front right now. But that offense, I just have never seen a team make such a concerted effort to build around speed. You know, they've got Hill and Waddle on the outside, Sherfield and Slot. Like, that's three blazing fast receivers. And then even in their backfield, they've got two of the fastest running backs in the NFL. And it's just so taxing for NFL defenses to cover that. Their defense is not at the caliber of a lot of those other teams I mentioned. And I think that's what's holding them back. But, you know, if you get on a run, you know, you get on a run, and you know, I'm very curious to see how that offense holds up, particularly if they have to face a cold weather matchup like Buffalo in the playoffs. Like, if Miami goes to Buffalo, I think we'll learn a lot about where that team is, because speed only matters so much if you get into a game where it's windy and snowy and your quarterback can't really throw the ball that much. So, you know, probably Kansas City or Buffalo in the AFC.
Yeah, I know. That's great. So what are your thoughts on this weekend's game, the Lions up against the Vikings once again?
Well, it's obviously very important for the Lions, right? We mentioned at the beginning of this call, like, that was a game that they had in the bag and blew it in Minnesota. You know, it's harder to win on the road. It was a game the Lions should have won. But as the Lions have gotten better this season, in many ways, so have the Vikings. You know, I mentioned that it's a first-year head coach for them. So they've been kind of adjusting and growing within that coach's schemes, and you can see it. You know, they had a obvious bump in the road against Dallas a few weeks back, but otherwise have been a very, very sound football team. So it's going to be a really tough game to win, but with playoff hopes hinging on it, like, it should be a very compelling matchup, right? If the Lions win this game, and you look at the remainder of the schedule, you start thinking, man, like, they really could run the table. Like, the rest of the schedule is set up for that success. The lone game on there, I think that would be a big question mark, is playing a very tough Jets team on the road. You know, it's a really great defense and be a fun strength-on-strength matchup with the Lions offense. But, you know, it all starts with Minnesota. Like, if you lose to Minnesota, it's probably, if it's not the final nail, it's certainly a critical nail in the coffin on your playoff chances. But if you win, like, the excitement is just going to kind of reach a fevered pitch here.
That's true, and it would be really cool to feel that after so many years and decades of not having that feeling for the Lions.
Well, you know, I think the thing I look at is I look at the 2010 season for the Lions, and if you want to go further back, I look at the Ravens season before they won their first Super Bowl. And if you look at the season before these teams had success, they closed the season really well. That Ravens team won their final four games, and that all-time great defense was really starting to form it itself at that time. And then going back to that 2010 Lions team, you know, they also closed with 3 or 4 wins, and then went into the next season and started 5-0, and that was the year 2011 where they broke their lengthy playoff drought. So rosters change a lot season to season. They just do. That's the nature of the NFL. But enough players will be here next year. It's a young, growing roster. Confidence is building. That I think that, you know, no matter what, whether they win or lose to the Vikings, the way they're finishing this season matters. It will, in some important way carry over to next season and really kind of be that launching point of confidence and success that they need as they kind of progress to the critical turning of the corner in this rebuild.
Well, Justin, it's been awesome talking with you. Again, tell people where they can find you online and follow you and stuff.
Oh, I'm usually hanging out at the Detroit News, so you can certainly find anything on everything that I write, either in the print edition or online. And then on Twitter, which I briefly quit there for a month because I needed a break, but I'm back, and that's Justin_Rogers.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, and I definitely look forward to having you back next season. Fingers crossed, maybe. Who knows? I mean, good things, I think, are ahead for the Lions.
Indeed.
Justin, thanks for being a great guest on The Squad, and I love just all the different insights that he had. I feel like our team has great potential for not just this season, but going forward. My fingers are crossed, and hopefully we pull off a win against the Vikings this weekend. It's Ann Erickson, and you are on The Squad. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, I would love to hear from you. Reach out to me on social media, Twitter and Snapchat at Ann Erickson, Instagram and TikTok at Erickson Ann. I'll be back Monday with a fresh show, and hopefully we'll have something good to talk about in the form of a win against the Vikings. Have a great one, and until next time, go Lions.